Good morning, everyone, and welcome to episode 22 of the Bitcoin Veterans Spaces. My name is Coleman, and I will be your host. And I am joined this morning by Shane Hazel, Bob Van Kirk. I see Jordan on the Operation Libertas handle. I see Lisa Huff in the audience, Wade, Steve. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Morning, everybody.
While everyone's still joining the space and getting settled in to listen to today's episode, I'm going to go over the purpose of this show and why we do this every single day, Monday through Friday at 9 o'clock Central Standard Time. And the purpose of this show is to defend the values that defend our, to defend the Nate. I'm sorry, I can't speak this morning. To defend the values that our nation was founded upon. We want to champion decentralized, trustless systems that empower individuals, communities, and small businesses and eliminate a central authority so we can advance the cause of a free and open society. We do this by harnessing the power of Bitcoin and promoting a world where every individual has the undeniable right to control their own destiny, their own assets, and their own privacy. And we don't support tyranny in any of its forms. And we will continue our combined experience and passion to ensure that the promise of liberty thrives. And together, we will continue our oaths to safeguard the ideals that do define us. We are veterans, we are Bitcoiners, and we are for freedom. Hoorah! In case y'all missed it, last night we had the Bitcoin Veterans live video podcast, and we had Randy Kelly join the show. I only caught the first couple minutes live, and then I was able to tune in at the end where I heard the turkey story and the bear story, which is a pretty good one to hear. But I did have a chance to listen to the whole thing this morning. It was really, really good. So if you get a chance, definitely go check it out on YouTube, on Spotify, or we have it posted back there on Noster and Twitter. But it was a really good conversation. I really enjoy hearing what Randy has to say about everything. So highly encourage that. I want to start off with this video that was posted. I believe it was from the Singapore crypto convention, and it's a video of Vitalik. I can't even say his name this morning, guys. I do apologize. But let's go ahead, Jacob, and let's roll this video.
And its properties are far better than all the rest of them. It's mathematical. No more double spend, it's incredible. Push your cash in your brain or it's terrible. A new form of wealth begins.
So I think that pretty much sums Ethereum in a nutshell. I'm quite positive that's everything. It's definitely doesn't look very promising at the moment. So, anyone have any thoughts on that?
What the hell was that?
You know, I love it because it just makes it so easy to send that to folks who enjoy Ethereum. It's fun to share with them how the brilliance is. You know, it's almost like there's no words.
I was just saying earlier this morning that the race for Bitcoin Salesman of the Year is going to be tight this year. I think Elizabeth Warren and Schiff and the rest of those guys, they've got a stiff competition in Vitalik thing in there.
It's just a farce. And so there's another video I definitely want to show that's a little bit more serious. And that was the video from Safety Dean's podcast with Sailor. He just came in and spoke. I haven't had a chance to watch the whole or listen to the whole podcast. But Jacob, if you could, go ahead and roll into the Sailor video for me.
Like a rational world is Amazon, Microsoft, Meta, Apple. They all buy Bitcoin with their cash flows. I mean, Apple would be worth an extra $1 trillion, right? If Apple basically started buying $20, $30 billion a year of Bitcoin, you know, they spend $500 billion on their stock. Where would Apple be if they bought $500 billion worth of Bitcoin right now? I mean, granted, it was over a 10-year time period, but if you look at that, right, how do you increase the market cap of Apple or Meta by a trillion? And the answer is you start to take your cash flows and your treasury, and then you buy a capital asset that's plus 40% a year instead of one that's minus 4% a year. And when that happens, you can see in our macro model, the equity market's going to look good, right? That's going to put a boost in the S&P and the NASDAQ and the Magnificent Seven. So it's not, you know, I guess my point is, I don't want to be a doomer like Bitcoin good, everything else bad. Because the truth is, you could say Bitcoin good, equity bad, and bonds bad. But if I actually back the bonds with Bitcoin, and if I back the currency with Bitcoin, and if I back the equity with Bitcoin, then they're all going up, right? So it's like just Bitcoin better, and everything else is actually going to grow. And that's the argument for Bitcoin just makes the world a better place, right? It's the constructive, cheerful, progressive, grow out of your own problems with a good technology, you know, vision, as opposed to, you know, this nation is going to melt down its currency and its banks are going to melt down and we're all just going to jump on a lifeboat. So it's
did anyone up here this morning get a chance to listen to that full interview with Safe and Sailor?
Only parts of it, Coleman. Really, really fascinating. You know, when they're going back and forth, you know, talking about sustainability and earning yields and all that. I think it's probably a bit over my head in some cases, but really interesting to watch two of these titans in Bitcoin have these conversations. And I think that's one of the things about Bitcoin that's really pretty amazing is there are a lot of open minds here. And so it doesn't devolve into, you know, what we typically see out there, you know, in legacy media where the name calling and the tribalism starts and all that fun stuff. This is more of a talk through of ideas where you're starting to see people explore some of the, you know, ideas and narratives of where we're heading and where we're going. And I don't think anybody's really got it all, you know, pinned down. This is absolutely new. But it nonetheless, fascinating conversation.
Yes, and I think anytime Sailor speaks, it's definitely worth tuning in for. His man is so smart and so in tune with everything going on. This leads to a good little segue with BlackRock and how they just put out a report. And I'm not sure if y'all saw it or not, but they published a report yesterday afternoon, and it was why Bitcoin. And they pushed this to all of their clients. And the document highlighted several key points about Bitcoin's role as a unique asset for its investors. And the highlighted points that they had were Bitcoin's hard-coded supply cap of 21 million units means it cannot be easily debased. Its global digital native nature means it can be transported anywhere in the world at near real time and at zero cost, transcending the frictions long inherent in moving value across political borders, and its decentralized, permissionless nature made it the world's first truly open access monetary system. And I think this is really important. We definitely need to spend some time on this, as this is a lot of the issues people have. And if you're trying to move money anywhere or try and do anything with banks, it's so infuriating when we have this technology and it can be done instantaneously, and yet we have to use this archaic system. And it's fascinating to me that BlackRock is publicly putting this out there for all of his clients, showing them there's definitely an alternative to this. It can't be debased. And this is what we need to start leaning into at a time where the Fed is going to start supposedly cutting rates this afternoon. Does anyone have any thoughts on the BlackRock article that came out?
I didn't read it, but I think we're going to see a lot more from them and others who are obviously have something to gain from the adoption of Bitcoin. I do think it's interesting, you know, from the standpoint, like just based on your description about the, you know, the fact that you can move money pretty cheaply with less friction, and, you know, pointing, highlighting the fact that it doesn't need counterparties or intermediaries.
I think the system is on such a brink of collapse, and it's kind of been, the can's been kicked down the road for so long because of these like little incremental gains that they can kind of act like they're getting, even though a lot of it is just like shell games and inflation and manipulation. But the thing is, like, as much as these people really need to learn a lesson and like have a very hard reset or whatever you want to call it, Bitcoin is most likely to allow for a smoother transition. And this is just one way where they could start cutting a lot of costs and act like, oh, they're still doing everything so great, even though it's just, they're really just changing a very fundamental thing and cutting a lot of waste in the process. It's just, you'd hope that they would see the benefits in that and do it, but they're also so used to just getting free money that do they really care about cutting some of these costs?
And I think that Randy Kelly talked about this last night on the podcast, where he believes that Bitcoin is that outlet for us, how we can help preserve and have a smoother transition out of this. Not saying that it's going to be smooth sailing, but it was really interesting to hear Randy talk about that. And Shane, I don't know if you can touch on that a little bit more on to Randy's comments.
Yeah, really. I mean, if you guys haven't seen the show from last night, it's fantastic. Randy is just a force of nature when it comes to geopolitics and understanding how forces are trying to move to capitalize on the changing hegemony right now from a unipolar to a multipolar world, and kind of the narratives that have been shoved down our throat. I think one of the big things that he brought up last night is, you know, as we're moving through this period of change and renaissance, if you will, the ability for us to communicate over vast differences with you know, being free, you know, and I know, I think, you know, obviously X is a honeypot for a lot of us, and but at the same time, you know, there is something to it right now where the amount of communication and the amount of people looking at it, where it is, you know, somewhat free, is able to short circuit a lot of what's happening in this world in terms of major power players trying to deceive people and then take action, you know, whether through force or coercion, like we see all over the place right now. The ability to short circuit that with Freedom Tech and to, you know, call out the lies in real time. That's one of those things that, you know, Bitcoin is behind. And we talked about it specifically as Bitcoin veterans. This was, I think, the key piece, you know, kind of the takeaway is, you know, this group has such a different relationship within its own members in the way it's organized. It's a completely decentralized group. And I think this was, you know, most of Randy's point is these decentralized groups that are in Bitcoin especially are going to be forces that state powers are going to have to consider in the future. And that's because as we move on and Bitcoin gains more and more value or more purchasing power over time, and it's concentrated in hands like Bitcoin Veterans, that is a decentralized network that can communicate through Freedom Tech all over the place. You've got a group of guys and gals for that matter, and, you know, civilians all coming together to say, all right, we can not only do this, but we have an oath that we swore to each other a long time ago, this bond where we want to provide, we want to work, and we will go in and we will put in the proof of work without even being paid to progress this mission. That is something I don't think that you find in a lot of other groups. The decentralization and the camaraderie and this idea of, you know, doing this selflessness that they don't have. Like, the rest of the world doesn't have what Bitcoin Veterans does And that piece is something that is going to gain more and more and more traction as Bitcoin is reinvested into this parallel economy. And so, yeah, it's like I said, you know, if you want to dive into it, that show last night with Randy was absolutely, 10 out of 10.
It definitely was 10 out of 10, and I highly encourage everyone to go back and listen to it, as Randy points out a lot of points or a lot of issues going on and solutions to get out of it. It's really easy to go down the doom and gloom route, but Randy definitely went over and talked about how the solution's out of it. And he didn't say it was going to be smooth sailing, but there's definitely solutions. And it's starting with those communities, local communities, get involved. Again, if you're a veteran out there, reach out to us. We have a large community and we're constantly growing. So go check us out at the Bitcoin Veterans website or just send us a DM and we'll get you hooked up with one of our community members. Jordan, did you have anything that you wanted to say on that?
I don't think she's up on the stage, but I think Lisa had made a tweet about the show, and I was kind of, it sounded like she had watched it. I was hoping that she would give her opinion on it, because she would, I think, would just have a different perspective, being the absolute boss that Lisa is, as opposed to just veterans' takes on it. But I don't know if Lisa's available to talk.
I'm not sure if she'll be able to jump on, but Lisa, if you're able to just hop on and just go ahead and interrupt me while I just continue kind of moving through this. The freedom tech on this aspect of Bitcoin is, we're in the beginning stages of this, and it'll be a couple more years still before we really see the implications of what it's going to be able to do for these countries. We can look at El Salvador. We can see how they just got financial independence. They stated that earlier this week. They don't need the IMF help anymore. And you can look at the country of Bhutan. Their government is mining their own Bitcoin through their green energy. And now they're the fourth largest government that has Bitcoin. They hold roughly about $750 million worth of Bitcoin, or 13,000 Bitcoin. And it's very... not surprising, but it's good to see that these countries are taking these risks because they don't really have much else to lose. They're at the bottom of the barrel. They're getting walked all over. And if they see a way out of the current system, and they're taking it, and it looks like it's we all know the outcome for this is going to be superior, but it's nice to see that these countries taking these risks. And sorry, I'm just kind of rambling on here. If anyone else has anything else they'd like to mention on this, please go ahead.
I was just going to hop on and comment. Your show with Randy was, in fact, one of the best. I mean, you guys, I'm not quite sure what the metrics were, but there were times when y'all had almost 1,000 people. I'm sure I wasn't watching the whole time what the metrics were, but I mean, you guys had a lot of people that were in that space last night. Listening to Randy, I mean, you know, I love it that y'all flatter me so much and call me a boss, but like, that dude is really a boss, right? Like, SEAL, commander, all sorts of like weird in the woods training with bears. I mean, it was a great show, but what an incredible life he's had. And yeah, I did tweet because he said that, you know, Bitcoin is, I can't remember if he said is or could be. Nevertheless, Bitcoin is divine intervention, which there are many of us who have thought that for a long time. And really, every time I say anything related to God on Twitter, I lose like 200 followers immediately, which I find hilariously funny. But
that's a good thing.
God, yes. You see, I said it again. But to tie into what you were just speaking about, you know, what I find really troubling, perhaps, is so the work that I'm doing now is speaking. So I have I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn. And for any of y'all that don't spend time on LinkedIn and maybe you think it's horrible, I do spend a lot of time there because I feel like there are a lot of people that don't live on Bitcoin Twitter that perhaps we can bring to our side of thinking. So I do post quite a bit. And some of the benefit of that is that people from all over the world, energy companies from all over the world, are reaching out to me going, hey, you know, can you help me hook up with a miner? Here's what my energy source is. And then they'll proceed to lay out what they have in mind for a mining facility in their country. And, you know, while I personally think that that's perhaps great for the Bitcoin network, it also just makes me really effing mad for the United States of America that we've had the mainstream mafia and Elizabeth Warren and Jamie Dimon out just doing sinner's work saying that this is a terrible technology because we're pushing technology offshore. I mean, and I've said it for a long time, it's my opinion that us sanctioning Russia was one of the biggest blunders that the U.S. Has ever, will ever make, because we pushed Russia into the arms of China. And I mean, it's just so incredible to me that a middle-aged woman who went to public school can see this, and yet you have all these people in the world with Harvard degrees and Stanford degrees and PhDs in economics, and they're all just denying the technology. I do think that Elizabeth Warren is the biggest threat to national security, and anyone that goes along with her way of thinking in the Bitcoin space is a threat to national security. So it is no surprise to me that your organization is gaining hundreds of members each week, and that you are a voice, you know, a really powerful voice for Bitcoin in this space. And really, you speak for all of us. Lots of people just don't know it yet.
Thank you, Lisa, for those kind words. And you're right. Elizabeth Warren is just completely evil. The Harvard PhDs, all the economists out there, they all have the same agenda, though. They're next to the money printer. They're used to just being directly involved. And that's what that BlackRock article kind of talks about. It's decentralized. It's permissionless. It's open access to everybody. And it doesn't matter how much Bitcoin you have. You're not in control. It's for the people. And we need to just make sure that we're spreading that message. And there's another video that we can roll into really quick where Tom Emmer talks about this exact thing. So just give me a thumbs up, Jacob, when you're ready, and we'll just roll right into this video.
That applies to not just Bitcoin, but everyone in the digital space. The government is like a legalized form of the mob. Right. In order for you to be safe and secure, you got to pay the VIG. In order for you to do the things you want in this country, you got to pay the VIG, taxes, whatever that might be. They are scared to death. And this is where the Elizabeth Warren attitude comes from, of decentralization, because you know what it changes? It restores what this country was built on, which is by the people from the ground up. Not from political nightmares like the senator from Massachusetts, who shall now not be named, that literally wants the top down. That's not what this country is based on. That's not our value. We need to make sure that we open this up. Permitting reform, bureaucratic reforms. You're going to have to reduce some of these agencies, and you're going to have to bring the financial legislation that's on the books. You're going to have to bring it into the 21st century. Why do we keep trying to shoehorn this new thing into something that we wrote starting in the 30s? This is a new world. We got to get caught up, and we got to get into the 21st century.
We need to get caught up into the 21st century, and we have to stop using these archaic systems just because they benefit a select few. So Tom Emmer summed that up perfectly, and I think it's important that we just continue to keep spreading this message. ACSE joined up here, and Sacrificable, good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, Coleman. Hey, I just wanted to circle back to the Kingdom of Bhutan. I threw a quick picture up that I pulled from LinkedIn, actually, just like Lisa was mentioning earlier. And I think this is a metric that's going to start to resonate more with people. You know, we see MicroStrategy talk about Bitcoin per share for all of their shareholders. And Luke, he put up this really, you know, kind of eye-opening picture for me on, you know, the Kingdom of Bhutan and how much Bitcoin they have versus their population. And as countries start to accumulate, we're looking at, you know, nation state adoption. And this is going to be the metric that I think people will look back on and start to see a shift in, you know, world powers based on how much Bitcoin they have per person or per capita.
AC, do you want to go over those numbers just for people who can't view it or just listening in the background?
Yeah. So like for the US, as an example, roughly 333 million people, Bitcoin holdings at 207,000. And so he did the conversion, at least in the picture, of back to USD. So that's roughly $37, $38 in Bitcoin per person. But then you compare that to like the country or the Kingdom of Bhutan, the population is only 782,000, but they hold 13,000. So the conversion from yesterday's prices is roughly $1,000 worth of Bitcoin per person. And so those are just the two. He also lays out China, Great Britain, and a couple other, and El Salvador especially. And even El Salvador, you know, per capita, they're at roughly $55 in Bitcoin per person versus the US and 38. So we're starting to see a shift in, you know, what Shane was talking about earlier in economic power of the future and having that voice to be able to shift the narrative and shift the direction of not just the people within that particular country, but globally as well as, you know, the greater society and having a larger voice in the direction that we move in the future.
AC, those numbers of holdings were what the government of each country is holding, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And I mean, I did the calculation last night, so don't quote me on it. But this is also an incentive for, you know, the plebs like us, because when you do the math, it's an amount that is affordable for most people in Western nations today. And it's getting to the point now where it's also potentially affordable for people in the global South. And so the biggest takeaway for me was, you know, twofold. Number one, stay humble and stack sats so that your position provides you a greater voice. But then also consider, you know, different jurisdictions that are going to be friendlier to Bitcoiners in the future. Or if you're not willing to vote with your feet, and I get that, you know, I know a lot of us Bitcoin veterans are willing to, we still believe in America and we're still willing to fight for America, but, you know, accumulate to the point where if you're not willing to move to a jurisdiction, empower yourself with that economic power to be able to make that change in the future.
Yes, and don't be scared to vote with your feet if things aren't going well. That was the thesis on the sovereign individual. And so just make sure that you're out there. And AC, I definitely want to thank you for throwing that up there. It's really interesting. And I would have liked to have known what the debt per citizen in El Salvador was 4 years ago. That would be very interesting to see the drastic change, because I know that they were deeply indebted to the IMF. And now they're debt-free and independent. So that would have been really interesting to be able to pull that up.
And what a signal for all these... Go ahead, Ace.
Sorry, Jordan. I'll throw a link in the nest as well. But he also goes through and does the analysis of this versus GDP. And that's another interesting one as far as, you know, what is the GDP of the country versus... the countries or the government's current Bitcoin holdings. So I'll just add that as another one for folks to look at. Go ahead, Jordan.
What an absolute signal to all the other underdeveloped and developed nations to see how the IMF has kept them in states of poverty since its creation, and how here's now an example of a country coming out of it and becoming independent in an economic sense, and how that will have ramifications across the developing world. And then you couple that with, at a bigger macro level, you know, the U.S. sanctioning Russia and basically taking its dollar reserves off the table. And that's a signal to all the developed countries that the dollar is not something to be held on to.
And to kind of spin off that, Jordan, the IMF was really harping down and trying to blast across every avenue they could that El Salvador was doomed because they were trying to get off of this debt cycle and they embraced Bitcoin. So it's definitely a rallying cry for every nation that's just kind of underneath the thumb of all of these imperial states.
Hey, what's up, everyone?
Good morning, Sacrificable. How are you doing?
Yeah, Scarcifiable.
Sorry.
No worries, brother. No worries, please. Man, first time up in here. Heard about it for a while now. I have no idea why this is my first time. I'm going to start a little bit with introducing. I'm from the Netherlands, ex-Navy, ex-MP. super great conversation. I just would love to tap into a few things that I've learned along the way. You know, throw up a few balls because there's a shitload of reason to be very positive about a lot of things that are happening today. With regards to the IMF and World Bank, you know, there's like, listen, the data, you know, the data is in our favor. I don't know if, like, some of y'all heard about, like, Africa, where there's this, solid fucking rock. Data is showing how the countries that have the least amount of IMF, World Bank shit type of involvement in these countries, they're the ones who are doing the best as we speak. Obviously, El Salvador is working for us. You know, we're, like, 3 years in, like, 2 weeks ago. You know, that's just going to be, it's going to be a one-way street. That's only going to go up. Probably doesn't matter which metric you are trying to poo-poo on. It's going to be a very positive news there because it's just too much, there are too much reasons to be positive. We have at the northern part of South America, we have a country that not a lot of people heard of. It's a former Dutch colony. It's called Suriname. Right there we have Maya Parbu. Maya Parbu is going for the presidency. This election takes place in May 2025. I know her. You know, she is a Bitcoiner first and doesn't want to have anything to do with politics. But it was people like Samson Mao who kind of like persuade her to go for this. And I think that's the most pure and, let me call it, strongest approach for, you know, trying to change a country within the political realm is Bitcoin at first and don't want to, you know, be a fucking politician. But still go for it. So that's happening in May 2025. Shitload of reasons to be positive about that shit. And you know what else we got, man? We got like this, like in the global south, we have like Samson Mao is doing a shitload of stuff. There are so many global south countries who are realizing that the resources that they have are like beautifully are tapping into the renewable. You know, opportunities in terms of, you know, getting their energy sector up into second gear. So there's so many things to be positive, you know, about the, you know, many, many projects that are going around worldwide. You know, it's an interesting development where most of it we see at Global South, where culturally speaking, Bitcoin is more of a need than a want. Someone said earlier about sovereign individual. I think this AC, you said it. I think that is an enormously underestimated, powerful development, that the voting with your feet. I think as shit is going to be more shitty, the more important the voting with your feet element is going to be. And I think it is absolutely inevitable. You know, if you, your freedom of speech, you know, money is information, okay? So if you want your life energy to be as valuable to you as possible, and maybe not just to you, but if not to you, then to your kids and their future, you know, this path is absolutely inevitable. And I think it's going to prove a lot of people, maybe not in the next 5 years, but in the next 10 years, you'll see countries like El Salvador, you know, and others will follow, where you see that there's going to be an impact to, you know, fuck this fucking GDP metric. We're going to find new metrics that are going to show people that, you know, things are going to change in a positive manner. And it's going to be, you know, Bitcoin that's going to, you know, make these things happen. So I'm very positive. Yeah, love being here, guys. And yeah, just I'll be SpongeBob from here. Thank you.
Hey, well, thank you so much for tuning in and finding us. And I really appreciate those insights. It does mean a lot to us when we get new perspective on things and new speakers. So thank you so much for joining us. I see uppercase Terrence and lowercase Terrence joining. And I see Greg Foss in the audience. Good morning, everybody.
Great to see.
And just kind of touch on... Oops, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No problem. I just came from the Daniel DiMartino space with Trueflation and was able to ask my question. So Hadam Agu, who's slightly regarded, he pointed out, or he claimed that the Fed purposely wanted to have the, I don't know if you guys talked about this, but have the rate cut, the market be split on whether the Fed was going to do 25 or 50. And she basically said that was BS. They screwed up because they wrote out their Fed whisperer, Nick Tamarinos or whatever, from the Wall Street Journal on Friday, pushing 50 basis points. The market kind of liked it, but not enough. And so they had to kind of walk it back when he issued another kind of article on Monday. So maybe I got the sense she's thinking it's probably 25, but regardless, it's screwed up because usually when you have these bigger cuts, like when the Fed raised 75 basis points, 75% of the market, meaning much of Wall Street and stuff, were pushing for a 75 basis point increase when inflation was rearing its inevitable ugly head. So now that the market is basically 64, 55, 45, or whatever it is, it's not, there's no consensus, and that's not good.
And I think that, no matter, oh, Jordan, go ahead.
I just wanted to piggyback on that a little bit. What a stupid fucking system where the markets start reacting to whispers of what the government or what the Fed might do. Like, I know this makes sense to everybody here, but like, what a stupid fucking system we live under where that is what moves the market and not like real market fundamentals. It's just absolutely, I don't know why it just hit me when you said that, Terrence, but like, goddamn, is that stupid.
I love that reminder.
And I don't know, someone always posts the meme where we're going to look back, or our children are going to look back, and we're going to be thinking that the whole world sat on edge because everyone is talking about it this morning, waiting for one man to decide on what the future is going to be like. You're right. It's idiocracy. It's an archaic system. And we need to have the change. And remember, the change is slow. It can't be quick. The system is too embedded in everything. We just make sure we're Bitcoiners. We have a low time preference. It's going to take a little while, but we can already see the momentum taking off. Right now, we're just a little snowball falling off the top of the mountain, but we're getting a lot of traction. And once that avalanche happens, everything gets cleared out. What what rate did she think they were going to go with? Did she think 25 or 50?
She may have said, so I caught her program late because it started at 9:30 a.m. Eastern, went for an hour. So she might have said that, but I missed that part. But at least to my question, she just basically went off because she's a former journalist and very colorful commentator. She's very compelling when you're listening to her live. She just, her main point was they screwed up, and she didn't say either way. I had a bet. I think she's thinking they wanted to get 50. They couldn't get it. Maybe they'll do it anyway. But interesting that Nick kind of walked it back. The Fed Whisperer guy from the Wall Street Journal walked it back sort of on Monday because they couldn't get to the 75 basis at this point. They can get it to consensus. So maybe they'll just do. And then also the numbers that came out were pretty strong for the economy. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Hey, Terrence. We're losing you to the Matrix, sir. You're coming all in and out. Good morning, Greg Foss. Welcome, sir.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I'm on a train, so sorry about the background noise, but I'm just going to throw something out for you. First of all, the administered rates from the Fed are of secondary importance to the two-year bond, and there's a huge spread there. Over 160 basis points between the two-year and the Fed funds. And then I'll throw this out. From Canada, with love, why not 3/8 of a point? 37.5 basis points. Think outside the box, Mr. Fed. You can move in eighths. You don't have to move in quarters. And you can move intermeeting. And you can actually be proactive rather than reactive. Over and out. Thanks from Canada. In your attic, living rent-free in your head. Okay, bye, guys.
And thank you for coming on here, Foss. We always appreciate it. You're welcome back anytime, and I hope you know that. AC, do you have your hand up, sir?
Yeah. Uppercase Terrence, quick question for you. I just threw a post from the Kobayashi letter up in the nest. And it kind of goes through some analysis on starting with a 50 basis point cut and how that has kind of turned out badly for the S&P 500. I was wondering if that was discussed at all or if you or anyone else has any other insights into, you know, the starting of a cut and starting with a 50 versus a 25 basis point cut.
So DeMartino Booth seemed to imply that anytime the Fed is doing a bigger move than normal, like 50 or 75, they want to get overwhelming market consensus and not royal markets, and they failed to do that here. But TBD if they're still going to do 50 or 25. But on Friday, it seemed like they unleashed the Fed Whisperer to very strongly push for 50 because that seemed to not be on the table. It's not really clear. But the other thing that I read from someone else who's kind of a so-called expert, it made sense to me. The key is, one of the keys will be the Fed's or Jerome Powell's remarks at, I believe it's 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. So they make the rate cut announcement and release their whatever. And then Jay Powell makes his prepared speech and then takes questions. And it'll be interesting to see how much he talks about what the forecast is and if they kind of are making room to make a lot more cuts, which is what everybody's expecting in the future, just kind of gradually as the economy weakens and inflation comes down and people lose their jobs and so forth to try to prevent a recession. So yeah, number of cuts that they hint at and the outlook will be very interesting.
And I think Foss and I think Joe also said it yesterday, they have to try and make some big cuts. They screwed up not cutting sooner. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's 50 today. And then I expect Jerome just to talk about it for an hour, just kind of covering his butt and saying they should have cut a little sooner. There's nothing wrong on the horizon. But we need to try and get back down to what the market's telling us the rate should be at.
Sorry, can I just briefly hop in? I don't know if there's a glitch, but is Foss still on the stage? Is he still on here? Or Greg, brother, is he there, guys, or is he not? Is he gone already?
He's showing he's still up here, but he said he was going to hop off, so I'm not sure.
Are you still there, Greg?
Greg.
He appears to be on stage. He's got a purple circle around him, but maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I don't trust Sweden, man.
You don't trust the purple circle? Oh, man.
I'll catch him some other time. No worries.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he's been doing pretty good about jumping up here, so just send us some questions. But again, I appreciate it. Really quick, while I have everybody's attention, I want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. On my notes, I have, they donated 6,000 rounds to us for a Bitcoin range day in Nashville. Check them out at blacksheepammo.com. Solo Satoshi, check them out at solosatoshi.com, open source Bitcoin mining. Punchplate, I think I saw you in the audience earlier this morning. Put your seed phrase not in your fridge like Terrence, but on a metal plate. This way it will last forever. And last but not least, Paladin Tower Tactical. Check them out at paladintowertactics.com. And really quick, I want to hit on July. Clear your calendars out for next year. The rumors are really coming in strong that there's going to be a Bitcoin conference in Juneau, and it sounds amazing. And I'm not sure if there's anybody up here that can speak on it a little bit further, but I'm getting really, really excited. I plan on going to Alaska next summer anyways, and this is just giving me a bigger excuse to spend more time up there.
Are there any preliminary dates for that? Because I have a client who'd love to go.
Wade
in Alaska.
So right now we're pretty locked in for July 5th and 6th. We've got some, we just want to make sure that we can secure enough lodging for everybody coming up. So July 5th and 6th, we've also tentatively, instead of a whale pass, have a more of a reception cruise going up Tracy Arm, so we can be on a 150 passenger boat, catered, going up, looking at watching the hydro flow off the mountainsides while we talk Bitcoin. It's a little bit bigger journey than just a party. Also looking at maybe having a range day and the Bitcoin Vets run. There's a lot of trails up here to do that in. We've already locked down Centennial Hall downtown. For additional housing, we've turned to the university. We may be able to house a couple hundred people out there, as well as local hotels and Airbnbs. So it's going to be pretty amazing. It's still preliminary, but we've locked down the location, and we're just going through all the hurdles of trying to put on a conference. There's a lot of nuts and bolts that go into this, but July 5th and 6th is tentatively what we're looking at, and the satellite events leading up to it should be pretty epic.
And the events will be held before the conference, correct, Wade?
Correct. We have a pretty incredible 4th of July here. You've got high mountains, and the booms bounce off the mountainsides, and the fireworks are shot over the channel. So we'd be coupling it over the 4th of July. I figure, you know, what better place to be for the 4th of July than here anyway, with the way we celebrate. We have the parade on the 4th, but the fireworks are shut off on the 3rd. So those who do opt for the cruise, you take the cruise. It's an 8-hour cruise down to Tracy Arm, and then come back in. And I shot an email off also requesting a quote for what it would take to maintain the vessel throughout the fireworks, just docked there in the harbor, so people wouldn't have to go find a place to be. And then the 4th is the parade, and then the 5th and 6th being the conference.
What time do you all shoot fireworks in Juneau on the 4th of July? Do you all shoot them around midnight?
Yeah. Yep. It's June is pretty light here. So when we hit solstice, so when the 4th rolls around, we shoot them off pretty late.
So then technically, is it done on the 3rd then and launched right at the beginning of the 4th, or is it done on the 4th, launched into the 5th?
It is the 3rd launched into the 4th. It's about 11:15, 11:30 is when they start shooting them off. Oh, sorry, 11:59. I stand corrected. So, yeah.
You older veterans are going to have to pace yourself.
Yeah, not if you're coming from the East Coast, that's a 4-hour difference too. So you're already awake for the morning.
Just put some cots up in the boat and they'll be good to go. Take a little cat nap.
No, but don't let this deter you. I've been up to Alaska in the summer. It is amazing. I've never been to Juneau, But I am really looking forward to this. This is going to be an amazing time. Wade, I can say that it is going to be kid-friendly, correct? Family-friendly?
Yeah, we're actually, that's part of our planning is for the conference. People have struggled with, different conferences have struggled with bringing kids in and how to keep them occupied. We're considering something more along the lines of field trips out to like the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, out to DIPAC, the Fish Hatchery, things that they'd be more interested in. Sure, they can talk Bitcoin and they can play games, but I don't know if they can handle it at the same level that us adults can handle Bitcoin conversations. So to be able to break it up and get them out to do some Alaska things in field trips in a bus with some adults and supervision, I think that would be a better adventure for them. So we're going that direction. We've got a couple people planning that, all of those events strictly, and they're focused on that. So yeah, very kid friendly. So bring your kids.
I'd also add, as a lot of these things get more solidified, I would imagine that there's going to be a lot of pre and post conference type events that start springing up where there's opportunities to take your family and go do some really cool stuff in Southeast Alaska.
I'm just going to hit on this really quick, as I just saw it post up on my news feed. There's breaking news coming out of Lebanon. It looks like the Hezbollah walkie-talkies they're using at the funeral for everybody that was injured and killed yesterday have just started exploding. Don't want to end on a bad note, but I just saw that come through and thought we should just make everybody aware of what's going on.
Was that serious or tongue-in-cheek?
No, I don't want to end on a bad note, but the news is serious.
Everybody open up your Baofengs and check for petting.
Yeah, everybody's going to be afraid of their cell phones pretty soon. It might actually be a good thing for society in the long run.
Yeah, cell phones are going to be left on the counters and away from everybody, so it might be might end up being a good thing. But this is just insane what's going on. But I definitely want to hit on some better things. I don't want to end the day off on this. So does anybody have anything else they'd like to mention about the Bitcoin Alaska or the Fed rates right now? I'm going to take that as a hard no for everybody.
So real quick, the Fed rates. So they're going to borrow from the future. It's just a matter of what rate. So we've conceded that they are going to borrow from our future. It's just a matter of how expensive it's going to be, just to be fair.
100%. Is it going to be 25 basis points cheaper or 50 basis points? And James Lavish, I definitely like following him. If you guys aren't following him, you need to check him out. He just posted a very interesting fact. I'm just pulling it up right now. With an annual spending of $6.95 trillion and taxes bringing in $4.91 trillion, the U.S. government is currently overspending by $233 million per hour. That is just a crazy number. We all do not have enough Bitcoin. I'd be interested to know, how do you bring this up to your no-coiner friends? When I bring this up, their minds, I can just see them. They can't comprehend these numbers, and they don't find it believable. And so I was just wondering if anyone has a specific way they like to preach this topic and just kind of make it so they understand there's literally no way out of this.
I like the whole breaking seconds down or comparing dollars to seconds. So I think it's what, like a million seconds is like 7 days, a billion seconds is like 30 days, and a trillion seconds is 30,000 years. So to see how quickly like if you were to put every dollar towards 1 second, how quickly those numbers go up. I think that helps people put it into perspective, because $1 trillion is just so like unfathomable. It's hard to comprehend, but you can comprehend 30,000 years is a ridiculous amount of time.
I think one issue is people do not stop to think. This is just something that they've lived with their whole lives and they think they know. So breaking it down and giving people little tidbits of information is okay, but I found that asking people questions is better, like lead them. So, you know, do you see that mathematically this is not possible? Or what do you think about the national debt crisis or a sovereign debt crisis? And just get their thoughts, because if they're not going to give you the time of day, or they're too busy, or their mind's on, you know, picking up their kids or whatever it is, they're just not, they're not in tune. And so you spouting off a bunch of facts about seconds or per second debt and all that stuff is probably a waste of your time. So I think just trying to figure out if you can ask good leading questions and see if you can get a conversation going where you ask them what they think about it.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. And meeting people where they're at as well. When you meet people where they're at, you know, you tell them a story of how you became a Bitcoiner, right? And that's one of the most powerful testimonies you can give, especially, you know, if you're those guys out there that were like, man, this seems like funny money. It's ones and zeros, and obviously ones and zeros can be hacked. If that's where you came from, and you can kind of say, hey, man, you know, I was tired of my money being eviscerated by, you know, a central control, and then just plant the seed. You know, we're all on that journey. We're still on that journey. And to recognize that they've got a long, painful way to go in terms of swallowing that first orange pill, man. That's I think the recognition that you can share your humanity there in terms of where you started and where you are now and how it's changed your life or the life of your family or maybe even your community at this point. That is extremely powerful in planting a seed that maybe you can nurture. And I always like giving people a book. If you can give people a book, it's something tangible. They almost feel like they owe you a little bit in terms of, you know, hey, maybe I should crack this open and take a read on it, especially if you're in normal contact with them. I know like Jordan is part of F3 as well. I've got a, you know, jiu-jitsu gym around here. You can just kind of start to, you know, have those conversations with the people that you're close to. And by, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months down the road, sometimes they'll come back to you and say, yeah, you know what? I'm really happy you gave me that, man. I'm starting to think a little bit differently. And I've got some, you know, questions for you now.
Shane, what book do you pass out?
Oh, I'm very much in the camp of the fiat standard and then the Bitcoin standard. And it depends on who I'm talking to, too. You know, down here in the South, Brian DeMint's book, Bitcoin Evangelism, is quite a hit. So it's one of those things where I think you just kind of judge it by, you know, who you're dealing with, and maybe, you know, regionally it might be a little bit different.
I think I've bought about 24 of the Bitcoin standards and only have one copy with me. That's my go-to one. I pass it out to everybody. It's like $15 on Amazon. That's where I get them from. I just order them in 3 or 4 at a time, and I just always have one with me, just pass it out. So I agree with what Shane said. Always just have it on there. Well, we are at the top of the hour. Does anyone have any final comments or closing remarks they would like to make before we start wrapping up?
Yeah, one last time, I'll just plug Randy's interview last night on Bitcoin Veterans. Absolutely phenomenal. Don't miss it. It's worth every second.
Thank you, Shane. Yes, it definitely worth it. Again, I listened to it in full this morning. Randy hits a lot of good points. It's definitely one you want to go back and listen to. And so if no one else says anything, I want to thank y'all for joining. Everybody who joined up on the panel today, AC, Texas Toast, upper and lowercase Terrence, Bob Van Kirk, Wade, Jordan, Shane, Jacob for doing everything in the background. I really do appreciate it, guys. It means a lot to me. And all of you in the audience, Tom Tabor, Alex, I see you out there, Death and Bitcoin. Thank you all for joining us and tuning in. We'll do this again tomorrow morning at 9:00 Central Time. And we do it every day, Monday through Friday. So make sure you tune in. Get on the mission. It's really simple. we need to find Bitcoin or we're going to be stuck with tyranny. And check out the Bitcoin Veteran podcast. We find that on YouTube. We find it on Noster. You can find it on our Twitter handle page. So go check that out at Bitcoin Veterans. And I love you all. And you guys have a great day. And let's see where the Fed puts us.